Okay, this is an interview for Ain't It Cool News with Dr. Karen Orton and the lovely...
Gemma Atkinson.
Fandabby Dozy. Okay, firstly, Gemma, it's lovely to see you. Can you tell us a little bit about the film, please?
Basically, it's based on the true story of the Dyatlov Pass incident, obviously the Devil's Pass, as we've named it. Basically, in 1969, some ski hikers went missing in the Russian mountains, and to this day, the Russian government still doesn't know, or they're claiming to not know, what actually happened to them. They were found all sprawled out from the campsite as if they'd ran from something. They had broken bones but no external bruising. Two of them had their tongues cut off. Some of them had no clothes on. And these were all really experienced hikers. And so for something like this to happen to them, it's quite a mystery. So the film is about American film students who we go to make a documentary. And while we're there, weird things start happening to us.
Wow, so that's a huge nest of intrigue for starters.
Yes.
How did you approach it?
It was kind of weird because at first, when the script was offered to me, I said yes straight away because to working with Rennie Harlan, I'm a huge Sylvester Stallone fan, and I thought, you know, he's done some amazing films, and just to work with Rennie at first, I was just like, oh my gosh, it's amazing. Then I read the script and I was like, because I genuinely didn't know how it ended, it was one of those, when you're telling a story, sometimes you know how it's going to end, so you just look for how someone's worded it. With this script, I genuinely had no idea how it was going to end. So as I was reading it, I was thinking, oh my gosh, yeah, that could have happened. That's quite an interesting one. You know, I think everyone has their own idea, and we just had to all approach it unaware of what it was. You know, it was kind of, we couldn't go into thinking, this is what happens, because our film says it does. It was a case of, this is what we're making the audience believe happened. But we had to just go in blind, really, and just kind of, it was weird being on the mountains and kind of, it was quite eerie at times and a bit weird when you're back in your hotel at night thinking, gosh, something actually did happen on there. And it's weird that the people who it's about, you know, they've got families and stuff. And
it sounds very weird. Did you feel any level of responsibility in representing the characters? Or
yeah, definitely. We didn't want to offend anyone to start with, and we spoke to a few people in Kirov Square. We were filming a few of the Russian locals there, and asked them their opinion on it. Like, what do they think actually happened? And they still don't have a clue. A few of them said it was the government. They think it was weapon testing with the government. Another woman said it was supernatural, you know, ghosts, aliens, whatever. Someone else said an avalanche, but then we had a mountain rescue expert with us, and he said they wouldn't have got that far away from the camp had it been an avalanche. He said something like 15 metres per second it travels at. He said, so there's no way it would have been an avalanche. So we're just like, what the hell did happen? And we were all Googling it and trying to read as much as we could beforehand, you know, like on the plane and stuff, trying to work out what could possibly have happened. And it's one of them we still don't know. It's quite annoying, actually.
So you actually got quite frightened at times then?
Yeah, it was kind of it was freezing cold, which I think beyond cold, actually, it was really cold. And we were plonked, literally, on the mountain. It was the first 2 days in Kiros we had to learn to walk with snowshoes on because the snow is literally so deep. So it was a case of learning to actually walk in it, then learning to deal with your eyelashes not freezing and your hands not falling off and stuff. It was when it got dark, you know, and the sunset and things, because we'd have to get to set with snowmobiles and cars couldn't go as far as where we needed to. And then Rennie he was quite spontaneous, we'd say, I want to shoot over there today. So you'd have to send the mountain experts to go and check that there was no risk of an avalanche or there was no potholes anywhere. They'd go and scope it all out and then say, right, safe, come on. And you're thinking, oh my God, he said it's safe, but we've got all this equipment, there's a lot of us. So it was kind of, it was one of those every day you just kind of went for it and hoped for the best.
How did you find working with Rennie?
Oh, he was brilliant, Rennie. He's very professional, but he's like a friend as well in a way. He wanted all the crew and cast to bond as well. He said, I don't want us to just be on this mountain all day working and then we all go our separate ways in the hotel. So every night he'd make sure we all had dinner together, at least 15 of us. And he'd get us all some Russian vodka. That was the one thing we had to have a shot of vodka to warm up. Some fish and some potatoes he liked. And he'd make us all sit and tell a story about what we'd liked today, the best bit of today, the bits we've not liked, things we would have done differently. And he was just really sociable with everybody. He did a personal favour for me, which I'll be so thankful for. I'm a huge, huge John Cena fan, and Raw were doing the WrestleMania in Moscow at the time we were there. And I saw the poster for it, and I casually mentioned to Rennie, and he said, you know, I directed 12 rounds. So I said, yeah. So he said, so I do know John. So I said, oh, okay. And then the day later, he casually handed me his mobile, and it was John Cena, and he invited us to go and watch the show. So he made it work that I could finish a specific day a tad earlier, me and another guy, Luke, and we went and watched Raw in Moscow. So thanks to Rennie, I got to meet John Cena.
Blimey, what a dude. I mean, seriously, that sounds incredible. In terms of building your character, how did you go about it? How much of it came from you? How much of it was kind of talking with him and stuff?
He was really good in that he wanted, obviously there was a script, but he told us all he wanted us to just add our own bits to it as well. He basically said Denise is quite tomboyish, she's one of the lads, she can hold her own, he said, and go figure the rest. So I was like, oh, okay, brilliant. So, you know, what can we do? And he also, on some days, he'd just say, we're not doing the script today, we're doing tracking shots, but I want you all to be mic'd and just talk amongst yourselves, obviously in American. He says, in anything we find we can use, we can do. So I watched some of the rushes when we did the sound for it. We went to Warner Brothers to do that, and there was one day where we're all trekking and my snowshoe kept breaking, and I actually kicked it off, and God, I think I swore at it. I said something like this effing snowshoe. But because I did it in American, they've kept it in. So there is bits in the film that is just us four literally walking in the snow. And we kind of all had our own little quirky characters and had little alter egos as well, which we used to do, which was quite funny. Luke's was best. Luke's was a dancer called Stephen. He used to go into Stephen every now and again. But yeah, it was really good. And then obviously for the close-up shots, he was more specific on how he wanted us to be and stuff. But other than that, he was really good with letting us do our own thing.
Wow. How did you find working with the different styles of camera that obviously in the film?
It was brilliant. It was it took a bit longer, especially for Holly, bless her, because there was times when Holly had to be seemingly filming us. So obviously she had to hold her hand out and then the camera guy would be holding the camera as well. So she had it harder than a lot of us. And Matt had to do filming as well. My character, Denise, is the boom operator, so I had to carry this huge battery pack and my boom pole, which... For the first day, I was like, oh, I'm quite strong. And then on day two, I was like, oh my gosh, this is ridiculous. So that was annoying to carry around. Obviously, we all had to have big, thick hats on. And me and Holly kept saying at the end of the day, when we were taking all our layers off, we kept saying, I hope people don't think we're this big in real life, because we look like Michelin men in the film because we're so padded. But yeah, it was brilliant. It's one of those where there was times when we all really struggled because it was 7 weeks away from home and you were literally in the middle of nowhere. But within a minute, we'd be all laughing our heads off about something. And then we might be a bit locked down again. And then some days when it was too bad to shoot in, we'd all come to someone's room and watch a DVD and just eat crap and just hang out. And it was just like, you know, your group of mates. So I was really lucky that the cast and crew were brilliant.
In terms of the way your character progresses, what did you find most interesting about playing her?
Denise is one of those, she comes across as quite cool, but she's actually quite insecure. And I think she has a soft spot for wanting to be the centre of attention, just from a caring side of way. And I think me and Rennie came up with, she'd grown up with some brothers and a father and not a mother. So he said she was longing for this motherly relationship from someone. And unfortunately, she'd got it from men in the wrong type of way. So It was nice to have that little journey with her. And there's parts where she comes across as quite feisty and, you know, she puts the foot down and says, I'm not doing this, I'm not doing that. And then there's other times where she's quivering with fear and she's like, oh, someone help me, I need help. So it's good that she has the transition throughout the film.
Absolutely. Blair Witch is considered the gold standard by a lot of people who probably haven't yet seen this. Yeah. But in terms of other films where you have similar scenarios, what do you think makes yours different?
I think that it's based on a true story. I know a lot of films say based on a true story, but The Dyatlov Pass is a true story. So that, for me, is a big pull, because any true story, I always want to know the reasons why and things. So that makes it a lot more interesting. The fact that it was in Russia, I mean, most films are based in America, aren't they, like that? You know, these paranormal films. So the fact that it's, you know, that's in Russia and it's snow and it's eerie and... I love the fact that Rennie picked, apart from Luke, obviously, a British cast to be Americans. I like that he did that. He said he didn't want, like, a name. He wanted lots of unknowns and put us all together to mould us, which I really respected him for. And it was really nice. There was no egos or anything. And I hope that comes across in the film, in everyone's performances. And I hope people enjoy it.
That's really interesting, actually, what you were saying in terms of playing American. Firstly, I'm going to have to ask you the accent.
I've not done it for ages. I'm too northern now. Rennie used to make us... What was it he used to make us say? He used to try and make us do his accent. And than the American, and it was Mary Ellen, his assistant. She was proper, like, deep. She was from the South. She was all, like, real deep American. So she was brilliant, and we used to get her to say all kinds of stuff because she sounded like Forrest Gump. And she was so lovely, and she'd give us our call times and everything. And Mary Ellen's accent, for me, was the best American because she was so Southern with it.
Brilliant stuff. How do you think it impacts on the story with you playing somebody from a different culture, essentially?
I hope it goes down well. I mean, I did struggle with the accent, really, I think more so than any of them, because I'd still live up north. I'd go to my American lesson and have an hour speaking American, but then I'd come home and my mum would be like, "You all right, what do you want for your tea? And let's put brew on and all this." So it was difficult to... I think if you're in London, you're hearing different accents. But where I lived in Bury, it was just... a Bury accent every day. Matt was brilliant, and I used to say to him, you know, how do I say this word? Or what? And Luke was American. He is American anyway, so he would come up to me before the take and say, do you want to go through the lines? And anything, he used to shut his eyes and just listen to me. And every time I made a mistake, he'd put his hand up, and I'd be like, oh. But it was brilliant, because that's how you get better. You know, you have to have someone teach you properly, and Luke being American, I'm no better teacher, really.
Absolutely. It's really, really lovely that you tried so hard to get all the details right. It's a really, really good sign. In terms of your playing of the role, what did you find the hardest thing to do, apart from just the environment?
Probably was the accent, to be honest. It was a lot more pressure because people are waiting for you to do it wrong. Mm. It's one of those, whenever you see a film and it's an Englishman or American man playing the opposite, it's like when Naomi Watts did Impossible and she was English in it, the first thing everyone was saying was, "Oh, I wonder what her accent's like." And then when you get someone who's American, who's English playing American, "Well, I wonder what their accent's like." It's the first thing everyone looks for. So it was a lot more pressure. And whenever I get a script now, the first thing I do is say to my agent, "Is it American or English?" You know, my agent in the States sent me one through for a short in New York, and he said it's a New York accent. I said, great. So I've tried my hardest to just get a general American accent. Now I have to get a New York accent. But yeah, that is one of my main concerns, really, with most scripts. Because I just don't... You don't want to offend anyone and, you know, make anyone feel like, we don't speak like that. So it's a lot more pressure, I think.
How different do you feel the character is to you as a person?
I'm very much a tomboy, like Denise. I've got... My mum always says I'm like a female in a woman's body. Just with things that I come out with and stuff. And the fact that Denise is up for... She's up for the camping and things like that, which I love. I thankfully have a good relationship with my mum, so that's good. But apart from that, not much, really. She gets the get-up-and-go attitude and gets stuck in and muck in with the group. And I'm very much like that, you know, when I'm working or when I'm out with my friends or whatever. I'd like everyone to be a team and everyone to... I don't believe in kind of different hiatuses in a group. And that was great about Rennie. He used to say, he's the director, but we're a team. And he made sure all the crew were aware of that, even down to the people who made your teas and coffee. He was every day making them feel just as important as everyone else. And that's what I really liked about him.
Okay, the biggie. Are you a fan of horror in general?
Yes.
Yes!
Yes, huge fan. I love, for me, like the Halloweens and stuff, I think are classics. And the scary ones for me, now I'm old. Obviously when I was a kid, Freddy Krueger and things like that were horrific. But now I'm older, it's more like the paranormal type things. There was one, The Exorcism of Emily Rose.
Oh, God almighty, yes.
And I thought about that for about 3 weeks after I'd watched it, and I just kept thinking, oh my gosh. And it scared the crap out of me, that film. It really did.
It's partly about the mystery.
Yeah.
How do you feel this film handles the mystery? Do you feel it's quite open in what it's saying, or...?
Yeah, I think it's kind of... It leaves you to your own conclusion, I think, at the end. I think people have seen it and said, I don't believe that happened, which that's fine, everyone's entitled to their own opinion, but that's what that's the route we're going down. I've purposely not watched the film yet. I want to watch it with everyone else, so that'll be interesting. I've seen tiny bits when I did the sound, the voiceovers... And there's a huge scene, and Rennie said to me, do you want to see it? And I said, no. I said, I'll wait. And he said, it looks really good. And I said, I know, but I'll wait. And the stuff at the end that Matt and Holly filmed, I've not seen any of that either. And I actually left when they started filming that. I left a week early because I said, I just want to watch it. I said, just go and do it and then I'll watch it. So I've not seen it yet.
Wow. And the lovely thing is you're obviously so excited about it. Her little eyes are sparkling. It's great. What is next for you then?
I'm doing a short film in New York at the end of this month, which it's only 12 minutes, but it's a really good script. So that'll be good. And it's a few weeks in New York. I'm now an ambassador for USA Pro, the women's fitness gear. I've done the casualty of 10 months, Law and Order UK, which was just on in Law and Order in America. Possibly gone back to casualty in the new year. So that'd be good. It'd be a move to Cardiff. And just auditioning and pottering about and hopefully getting good reviews from this film.
I'm sure you will. What kinds of roles is it that particularly attract you?
For me, I always think of it as not specifically just the role for me. I like it as the script in general. I'd love to do a period drama, and I would love to do, because I do kickboxing, so I'd love to do something like, you know, like Salt or something like that, a kind of female kick-ass role. That'd be perfect.
The thing is, I can really see you doing it.
I'd love to do it.
That's absolutely brilliant. Thank you so much. And
thank you.
I look forward to having the absolute crap scared out of me later.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Wicked stuff. Thank you, Gemma.